All right. The question today, in essence, that Jesus asks is, how are you doing? How are you really doing? That's the heart of what Jesus is asking. It's going to be said a little different. You'll see it when we read it. But really, ultimately, Jesus is asking, how are you doing in your life? I don't know if you're like me. I went from being in a private school and I went to public school. And I remember being at Hearn High School walking the halls. And I was always trained to look at people in the eyes, you know, like as you're walking in the hall and you're like, hi, good morning. You know, and people are like, did he talk to me? What was that? And sometimes, you know, people would go, hey, how you doing? And I actually thought they wanted a response, you know, so I'd start and they'd keep going like, oh, okay, I guess they didn't really want that. Sometimes they would. But you know that awkward moment when someone says, how you doing? And you're tempted to just go, hey, good, and you're just kind of moving. And I've had friends at times who could read my spirit and they'd go, no, hold on, how are you doing? Really? We don't take time to really think about what's going on the inside. Our world is all outside. We know what to do, how to perform, how to look, where to be, what to say, in a lot of different settings. We don't often look inside. And that's something we're going to do today, and I'm hoping that you'll realize this is a really big deal. And it has a major impact on your ability to enjoy the things, whatever you achieve, that you'll need. If you have your Bible, we're going to look at Matthew 16. And we're just going to quickly kind of bring you up to speed on it. In Matthew 16, Jesus is talking. The Pharisees and the Sadducees are basically challenging him, saying, show us something to show your Messiah. You know, like other than raising someone from the dead or healing a blind man or casting demons out. You know, we want something that'll prove that you're Messiah. So Jesus says, I'll only give you one sign, and that's the sign of the prophet Jonah. So what's the sign of the prophet Jonah? It's the fact that when God wanted to get his attention, he spent 3 days and three nights in the bowels of a large fish. And when he came out, in essence, he got his life back. So what was he saying? He was saying, "You take note, it's going to happen. I will die, and I will be coming back 3 days later. And that should mean something to you if you're watching. And I hope that you are. Then, the question that I'd answered earlier, who do people say that I am? He asked that of the disciples, and they said all the things we talked about before. And then finally, Peter says, you are the Christ, meaning Messiah. You are the Son of the living God, which in those terms meant you are God on earth. And he said, you are right on. And then, it's interesting that he ordered them not to tell anybody. Don't tell anybody I'm Messiah. It's not time yet. And then in verse 24, it says, from that time on, and that's a phrase you got to pick up on, from that time on, in other words, for the rest of his time before the cross, he said, he began to explain to his disciples that he would have to go to Jerusalem, he would have to suffer many things, and then he'd ultimately be killed, and the third day he would rise again. So he made it really clear to them, hey, this is what's going on, but they missed it a lot. And then Peter's response, I love Peter because he always steps out. He says what probably the others were thinking. He goes, that's not going to happen to you, Jesus. It's not going to happen to you. And what he was thinking is, I know who you are. You are all-powerful God. That is not going to happen. You're not going to allow that to happen. He didn't catch it yet that had to happen. If Jesus did not die, we would all be without hope because Jesus died to pay for our sins. I don't know if you knew that, but he's already paid for all the sins you have ever done or will ever do. He's already paid for that. He had to do that. He's the only one who could pay for that. And Peter said no. And that was one time when Jesus turned around and looked dead in the eye, and he said, basically, shut up. He said, and I'll read it. Peter, he said to Peter, get behind me, Satan. You are a stumbling block to me. You do not have in mind the concerns of God, but merely human concerns. We often are Peter. We're telling God what he can and cannot do. He can't do something hard. That wasn't in my plan. And what Jesus said to him is, you are only thinking in terms of your, what benefits you. There's a bigger thing at stake here. I have to do this. So he addressed where it came from. He said, get behind me, Satan. And then he went into basically talking about the cost of following Jesus. And the thing that I love about God, when you really look at who he is and what he has actually said, he doesn't hide anything. He doesn't play games. Jesus said clearly here in Matthew 16, whoever wants to be my disciple, okay, and a disciple is just someone who will follow me, whoever wants to do it, this is what it's going to cost. You're going to have to deny yourself, take up your cross, and follow me. Denying myself, I have to say no to me. I have to say yes to God. If I don't say no to me, I can't say yes to God. So I have to deny myself. I have to take up my cross. Cross is all about dying. And that cross for each one of us is the thing in life that has got to be addressed. My lust has to die. My pride has to die. My selfishness has to die so that Christ can live in me. Deny myself, take my cross, and then follow. And follow, I think, actually is one of the hardest. And that's because I give to Jesus the right to choose and direct. I give up that right. So that's what he says. Hey, that's what it's going to take to if you're going to follow me. And then he goes into what I want to talk about today. He says, for whoever wants to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for me will find it. Whoever wants to save, hang on to, keep control of their life will lose it. They're not going to have it. But whoever loses his life, her life, for me will find it. And then he goes on to a question. So the if I hang on to, it's all about control. It's not about salvation. Interestingly enough here, he's speaking to disciples. So he's not talking to a crowd of people who are trying to figure out who he is. He's talking to people who are already committed to following him. So he just said, hey, if you're going to follow me, this is what it's going to cost. And then he's trying to help them evaluate that cost. If in following Jesus, I try to hang on to my life and say, God, I'm not going to let you touch it. I'm in charge. He goes, you're going to lose your life. But if by faith you trust that I am good, I am God, I am sovereign, I am wise, and I want to bless you beyond your ability to contain it, and you say, okay, God, I'll let you. He says, you'll find your life. So what's life? He's not talking about living, you know, breathing, you know, existence. He's talking about the very thing that he continued to promise to them. Jesus said, I have come that you might have life and you might have it to the full. He went on to say, we are to walk in newness of life. Our life every day, because of what God's doing in us, what God's doing around us, it should have a newness, a new car smell every day. Because God's at work. And that's what makes life fun. It's not boring. If you give God control, your life will not be boring. It may be challenging at times and incredibly awesome at times. It will not be boring. And then he talks about in Romans, he says, I want you to reign in life, which means you have an ability to get over the circumstance that everyone else is under. And not that you don't feel them and they don't affect you, but they don't control you. They don't bring you down. You have life, a quality of life that everyone's looking for, but they're looking to find it in all the places that it never provides. When I give control over my life, I will find it. When he controls and guides my life and I obey him, I begin to taste the fruit of it. Here's my prayer for you. I pray that you will trust God enough to obey him long enough to, in essence, then abide with him, that you'll start seeing the fruit of who he is and what he wants to do with you and in you. Would you like to be different than who you are right now? All the things that you're like, I hate that about myself. I don't like that about myself. He wants to help you work through that and become the person he created you to be. Would you like to have relationships that aren't surface, aren't conditional, where someone actually cares about you at a great depth? Well, it starts with you caring about others at great depth. And when you follow Jesus, that's where he takes you. What determines if I'll get this life? It all comes down to control. And we are all control freaks, right? I am too. But if I let him be God and I loosen my control over my life, I will begin to find it. Which takes faith. It comes from the way I look at God. What I think about his nature, is he good or not? Can I trust him or not? Or do I really think I'm wiser than he is? So then Jesus goes on to his question. He says in verse 26, what does it profit? What does it benefit? What is the good? Okay, different translations say, what does it profit a man if he gains the whole world and yet he forfeits his soul? Again, that's kind of a confusing statement. It is not about salvation. He's talking to people who know they're in a relationship with him. He's talking again to us as believers. What are we going to do? And he's saying, yeah, you have a choice. What does it profit? Means what's the payoff after all the costs? What's the gain? If I net out life the way I'm going to live it, and he says, look at it. There's two ways to do this thing. Look at both and see which one is really the one you want, because most choose the wrong way. So if I gain the whole world, it's interesting the way he puts this. He's basically saying, okay, you have, like, on your paper, if you followed what I asked, you wrote down what you want in life, something that'd be a major goal. And he says, okay, what if you had that? And what if I gave you everything? What if I made you, like, Trump in wealth, you know? You could buy anything you want. You can arrogantly tell the world whatever you think. What if in sports you're like Tiger Woods? I mean, like, you could, whatever sport it is, you're just the bomb, you know? And what if in intelligence, you know, you're one of the most brilliant people of all, you know, Albert Einstein. So he's making a point. He says, what would it, if you could gain the whole world, you could get the whole bottle of wax, but you'd have to forfeit your soul. There is, and I want you to realize this, there is a cost for everything you're trying to strive after. And our area is totally striving after a lot of stuff. We are not without motivation and goals. Everybody who was there Friday night, in terms of artists, they have been practicing, working, honing. I know one girl I found out, I think she practices 4 or 5 hours a day on her instrument. Crazy, that's a lot of time. But over a long period of time, she's incredibly good. Matter of fact, they say if you really want to get good, you have to put in about 10,000 hours on whatever you want to perfect. 10,000 hours. That's a lot of hours. You got to really cut other things out if you're going to do that. But he's saying here, if you want to have the success, the money, the fame, go to the college, get the job, then you're going to have to forfeit your soul. Forfeit meaning I have to give up possession to lose, to turn over to someone else. And that someone else is the thief, by the way. So the cost of my gain is the loss of my soul. Now that doesn't make sense yet. But the question today that I want you to think about is, am I doing that? Because then he goes on and says, what can a man give in exchange for his soul? Because if you're going to gain this thing, you've got to give something up. And I'll tell you why. You're like, well, I don't have to exchange anything. I just hang on to my stuff and I'll just do my best. Here's the problem. If you try to get your major life goal without God, it will take everything you have. You guys have all seen Survivor, right? I cannot imagine being there, doing all the things they're doing. I'm glad in the comfort of my home I can watch them freeze, starve, you know, backbite, kill each other. You know, I mean, it's just, it's crazy what they do for the $1 million, or actually $500,000 after taxes. Even that, you know, you can't get what you want. But we're talking here about the cost required to gain what I have is I must exchange all that I am to get it. It's a cost I don't see, but that's why Jesus is bringing it up. Why do I have to exchange it? It's because it will take everything I have to get it, because I'm doing it without God's help. You're not, you know, again, this is if you're seeking your own way. I'll show this in a minute. If you are so fixed on that, you'll have to give it all up. And I think you see that. So what is the soul? Well, the soul looks a little bit like this. What's our soul? Our soul is our mind, will, and emotions. It's all those things inside our skin. It's not our body, but when you close your eyes, you're thinking, feeling, experiencing, that's your soul. It is the real you. It's who you are. And there's a lot in that. And I'm just going to briefly touch base on that. The mind is your thinking, reasoning, making conclusions, learning. It's that thing you're supposed to be doing every day at school. Your mind is the thing you lose every day at school, right? Okay, so secondly, your will is your drive. Okay? It's your self-management or the lack thereof. It's your ability to control, guide, and motivate yourself, your will. It can be weak, and you do nothing, and you're a couch potato. Or your will can be strong, and you're like, marathons, no big deal. I can do that in my spare time. Because I have a very strong will. I can make it happen. Just challenge me. Some of you are so motivated that way. Your will is like, prove it. I'll prove it. You know, just challenge me. So it can be good or bad. You can have a very strong will to accomplish very bad things. Okay, ISIS, I'm sure, has some people in it that are very strong-willed, and they are making things happen, but they're not good. But I can also be driven by many things. The motives that push my will, whether it's pride or peer pressure or even justice, it can go a lot of different ways. Your emotions, it's what I sense in my state of being is. Okay, it's what I sense. My feelings are like, how am I doing, basically? It's what I feel. It's what I'm experiencing. Obviously, I can be happy, I can be sad, I can be romantic, I can be patriotic, I can be jealous. My emotions are really, should be what come from who I am or truth, okay? And I want you to think of that progression because that's really the way your life should flow. There's a battle in your mind that then affects your will to direct where your mind's thinking and your emotions should flow from that. However, the world reverses that. They say, what you feel is truth, by your will pursue it, and forget your mind, basically. Just take it as it comes. That's all you need. It's not really a good strategy, but that's kind of where it goes. I want to show you a verse that you probably have never seen because it's in the book of 3 John, okay? Some people don't even know there's a third John, but it says, beloved, I pray that in all respects you may prosper and be in good health. That's a great prayer. I want you to be successful in everything you're doing and even your health, you know? Because like as old people say, without your health, you have nothing, okay? But look at what he tags to it. And this is something we don't consider. Just as your soul prospers. What does that mean? For I was very glad, brethren, when brethren came and testified to your truth, that is how you are walking in the truth. And I want you to notice the comparison here is he's saying that your prospering is connected to how your soul's doing. And how your soul's doing is connected to how you're obeying. You see that? How you're really doing has a big impact. Well, a big effect on it is really your will, is your soul. But your soul, how it's doing, is really affected by how you do with what God has already told you. Are you banging or not? There's a link between me prospering generally and in my health with the condition of my soul. My soul can be healthy or my soul can be sick. But most people don't really consider how their soul's doing. They don't have time for that. The point is, I can't be blessed with my health and blessing unless my soul is healthy and prospering as well. Note the words, just as. I won't be able to enjoy it. So I want to talk here briefly about what I call soul care. Okay, now yesterday I went into the Apple store because my Mac had a problem. I'm not used to my Mac having problems, but I went there and I had Apple care. It's great, great thing to have. So they took care of me, good care of me. So I want to talk to you about your soul care today. How do I get my inner life healthy? I have an outer life and I have an inner life. Our outer life is what we think of the most of the time because it's how we interact with our world and what everybody else sees. And it demands my attention. I have to always be on my game. My inner life is actually more important. And it determines who I am becoming. And you know, some of you, I've heard you say, you know, I'm really trying to figure out who I am. And that is a struggle. The issue of identity in high school is really big. But I want to throw something out to you. It's really, that struggle is the dissonance or the challenge you're facing between your inner and outer life. Because your outer life is not matching your inner life. And you're like, I'm trying to figure out who I am. Am I this or am I that? And I know I'm this because that's what I have to do all the time. But I know there's things I believe. I know there's things I want. I know there's things I believe that are true, but it's not matching the way I'm living, the way I'm talking, the way I'm dressing, the way I'm choosing classes, what I worry about, what I think about most. And that is that struggle. I want to give you a huge recommendation. I don't do this very often. There's a book called Ordering Your Private World. I take this my summer interns, I usually have a guy intern and a girl intern every summer, usually someone from this group who goes off to college and is trying to figure out, you know, what I consider ministering in the future. And so we love working with them. They've been a great help. But this is what we go through with them, Ordering Your Private World. This book is all about saying, let's look inside. How's that going? What are the factors that are playing in there? How could you change your health inside? I highly recommend it. And I want to tell you a secret of life. So go to the next slide. Okay, on the back of your sheet, I put that there because I want you to be able to take it home and think about it. All right? Okay, now I need you to follow me here. Let's all look at the screen and not at your sheet yet right now. I want to start with my goals. Actually, my control. It really, the beginning part of my life, where this all starts, is my control or God's control. That's my choice. If I choose my control, if I hang on to my life, and he says I'll lose it, this is why you'll lose it. Because in my control, I can only choose my goals, okay? The American dream, whatever aspect of it is, that's what I want to go for. But then it comes to my costs. And I want to ask you right now, in your life, how much stress are you experiencing? How much pressure do you feel? How many late nights are you having to deal with things because you've got five APs? Or you're working a job and a sport and dating. And life is hard. That's what I'm talking about. You are paying a price right now doing the normal thing. You're not even thinking you're doing anything abnormal. But your life is stressful. I would even contend a lot of you going to college will be a reduction in stress because you're able to spread it out and you have control over a lot more things. You're not in this pressure cooker where all day long you're at a school, you know, from 8 to 4 and, you know, you go to class and class and class and class. But you've made choices and it's costing you. I can guarantee you many of the people who performed at Bring It, their life is full maxed. And the cost involved with what you want is stress and striving. It goes in a lot of directions. We could talk about that today alone, but you get what I'm talking about. That stress has an effect on my soul. That effect on my soul will ultimately determine if I can enjoy something. So for my cost, I get my reward. And many who are driven in this area, you get in the college you want, you get, you know, you win this weekend. Westfield was in the state finals. Does anyone know who won? Yes. We scored 2 touchdowns on Westfield. I just want you to know that. Herndon, 2 touchdowns on Westfield. State champions. We, 2 touchdowns. All right. Pretty good. They got their reward. And I'm excited for them. For them to have achieved that is a really big deal. I know that. But you know what? In August, they're going to start a new season. And it sort of doesn't matter in the sense of like, okay, what are we going to do this season? It's temporary. No matter what we get, it's challenging. Who's the quarterback of the Patriots? Who? Okay, it's kind of muddled there. Tom Brady did an interview probably 10 years ago when he'd already won, was it 3 or 4 Super Bowls by that time, Bobby? 3 at that time. He was dating a supermodel or married her. He was at the top of his game on the 60 Minutes. You know what his answer was? He goes, it's really good, but I still feel like there's got to be something more. I still feel empty. And see, and that's where we kind of know, but we don't take it, and we think, it's going to be different for me. I'm different. And so once you realize all the stress and all the costs where you have to walk over people and achieve and, you know, pull it all off by your strength alone, you will get your reward, but ultimately your soul will not allow you to enjoy it. My family and I went cross country back in 2000. It was a crazy trip. 11 of us in a van and a pop-up trailer from here to California. It was really cool. And one of the stops we got to make because of the friends we were driving with, she had some crazy people she knew growing up. She and one of her cheerleader buddies was married to the owner of the Colts, Jim Irsay. So we in our little van, we drove up to his, you know, mansion. The guard opened the gate and we drove in. And we're like, this is crazy. So we went inside and we got to meet he and his wife. And this humongous house had a full basketball court in the basement and crazy pool. And he's over there flipping burgers for us. And I'm like, this is surreal. This is really weird. But, you know, it was instructive for me. After that, we talked to our friends, and they said, you know what? It's really hard. It was hard talking to my wife because she said point blank, she says, we have no friends because everyone has an angle on our money. We have no friends that don't want us for something. But I think the cool thing was my friend was one who wasn't in that category. That's what she mattered so much. There's a curse to being rich because you got to spend a lot of time managing that wealth and keeping it. And you think of all the successful things you can do, there are very few that own it and enjoy it. Why in the world are so many successful people basically committing suicide by drugs? Literally committing suicide. Why in the world aren't the most successful people the most happy people? It's for that very reason alone. They have sold their soul to achieve what they got, and when they got it, it wasn't enough. But God says there's another way. If I will allow God to have control, and I lose control, I lose it to him, and I take on God's goals, Matthew 6:33 says, seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things you want, I'll give you. That's a cool deal that few Christians take up. Seek my kingdom, my righteousness. What is that? What God's trying to do here on earth and the quality of life he wants me to live. If I'll do that, he says, I'll take care of the rest. I'll give you more than you could even imagine. Everything else, I'll give you. And you know what that does? When you don't have to strive for it, you don't have to push for it, you don't have to give every ounce of energy you have just to make something happen, your soul does a lot better. I'm serious. It's really cool. So with God's goals, there is a cost. He puts it up front. You deny yourself, you take up your cross, and you follow him. But you know, a lot of those same things you're kind of doing on the other side, but when you do it God's way, it actually starts changing you for the good. You know the boundaries you have. You're not going to try to go around things. You're not going to walk over people. You're going to trust God. But the real work is inside us. But our pride and our desire to control everything goes, no, I don't want to do that. I'll just do it my own way. Well, that's the upper way. But if you do it God's way, he then gives you things. It was so cool Friday night to see some of the fruit of even your faith. We had two acts from Langley, thanks to two girls in this group who just made it known. We had a number of groups that came because they saw posters that you put up. And a lot of people got to hear that, you know, there's another way. I'm so thankful for each of you that were part of the Everything skit. It was awesome. And I trust that God will use that to make them go to the website. I would challenge you, go to the website for Bring It. There's four of your peers that are, their testimonies up on the web. We've also got a link there to Got Questions, Get Answers, if people are looking for answers about God. We also have a link on there to say, hey, if you want to continue the conversation, we'd love to talk to you about God. So I would encourage you to look at it, encourage your friends to look at it. I'm praying that God will bless us the opportunity to go forward. But you know what happens is when you invest in people, when you invest even in your own life and letting God change you, that never goes away. There's no downside. The blessing of the Lord, it makes one rich, and he adds no sorrow to it. And that's what I want you to realize. I change for the better, and I get to enjoy my reward. No matter if it's a lot or if it's a little, I can enjoy it. But on your sheet there, it has one thing that it isn't up there. On the left side, there's the issue of faith. Either I'm gonna lose my life as I look up there. If not, I'll maintain my control. But actually, those are upside down. I apologize for that. If I keep my life, it's because I let God control. I want to give you an illustration. It's like if you got a car, the world's way, the top way, is like having a car and having to pay the bill, but you never got the keys. Not good. On the bottom, it's when you got a car and you have the keys, and there is no bill. You get to drive it. You get to enjoy it. And that's what God says. That's the way I design life. So, this is the way that Jesus lived his life. He took time to get up early and pray and be alone to deal with his inner life. He took time to get away from the crowds. His life was busy. It was full, but he got away and he dealt with what was going on inside. To rest, to think, to be with the Father. So without faith, rejecting God and going my way, my soul will be sick. My mind will be oppressed, fearful, preoccupied, and anxious. That's life for most people. My will will be selfish, resisting God, weak, destructive. My emotions will be stressed, depressed, drained. And note this, guilt and worry suck the life out of you. Guilt and worry suck the life out of you. So you win the blank, you get the blank, you achieve the blank, and then what? That's the choice you need to make. Issues of life come that make life hard. I'm going to give you a name that you've probably never heard of. It's a man named Horatio Safford. In 1873, his family had been devastated by the Civil War and other things. They were going to take a break, take a vacation, so they were going to France. Something came up business-wise. He had to send his family ahead. He couldn't go. There was a violent storm as they were traveling over. The ship sank. He had to wait weeks to hear any news. He got a telegram, two words, saved alone. His wife had made it through. His four daughters had not. So he got on a ship. He started sailing across. And I'm sure he asked the captain, but they stopped over the area where the ship went down. And as a man of God, he knew where his four daughters were. They were with the Lord at that point. And he just was moved to just write some thoughts out. And this is what he wrote. When peace like a river attends my way, when sorrows like sea billows roll, whatever my lot, you have taught me to say, it is well with my soul. Though Satan should buffet, though trials should come, let this blessed assurance control that Christ has regarded my helpless estate and has shed his own blood for my soul. My sin, oh, the bliss of this glorious thought, my sin, not in part, but the whole, is nailed to the cross, and I bear it no more. Praise the Lord, oh my soul. And Lord, haste the day when faith shall be sight and the clouds be rolled back as a scroll. The trump shall resound and the Lord shall descend. Even so, it is well with my soul. How's your soul doing with what you're facing right now? Is it strong enough? Is it healthy enough to handle what will come? God says, that's something I really want you to look at and I really want you to deal with. I'm going to close with a video. It's a guy you may not know, but you do know his wife. Bobby, it's Carrie Underwood, right? Carrie Underwood. So this is Carrie Underwood's husband talking about what we've talked about here today. And then we're going to have some table time. So wrapping up what I talked about today, I want you leaving today thinking, how am I doing on the inside? I can change that. I can affect that. But I need to do it God's way. And I would challenge you today to really think through, are you letting God have control? And if not, let him have it. And then start following him. Invite him into your life and see what he will do. If you're a visitor here today, we'd love, hopefully you filled out the information. We'd love to have you meet Lee in the back over here. We have a gift for you. But last thing I would love to say is, would you please pray for all the seeds that were planted at Bring It? Pray that God would draw people to the website to hear the gospel, following up the drama that they saw. Just pray that God would direct them there. So enjoy your day. Have a great week.